Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at lower.com field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at columbuscrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Everybody, welcome into another episode of Investing in Real Estate. I'm Clayton Morris. This is the podcast where we focus on cash flow, buy and hold real estate for the purposes of creating legacy wealth and cash flow. That is what we are all about on this show. Very often, my wife and I will sit in, we'll talk about family structure, the family business, and real estate structuring. We'll talk and do other episodes around strategies and tactics. But today, we've got an expert interview, and I have to plead ignorance here. I don't know much at all about real estate investment trusts. You might know them as REITs, R-E-I-T's. And we've got an expert on today. He's been doing this for a long time. His name is Brad Thomas. He's the editor of the Forbes Real Estate Investor and a senior analyst at iREIT Investor. He's the author of the brand new book called The Trump Factor, and he's the co-author of the great book, The Intelligent REIT Investor. He's been doing commercial real estate for a long time and building these real estate investment trusts. And he joins us on the show. Brad, great to have you here on the show.
No, it's great to be on the show. Thanks so much for having me today.
Well, it's a real pleasure. You were kind enough to have me on your radio show. Tell us about your radio show so people can dial it up and listen to that.
Sure. Well, I just launched it, you're our third or fourth guest on the show, so thank you. And we started this using the Salem Network, which is a nationwide network of radio and TV. And I'm in the local market here in South Carolina. Greenville, Spartanburg, South Carolina is where I live. So the station is 94.5 The Answer, and that show is up every Saturday at 3 o'clock and Saturday at 7 o'clock p.m. and Sunday at 3 o'clock p.m. So you can listen and certainly stream live during the weekend. So I'm excited about this show and getting the word out there.
Cool. And we'll link all that up in our show notes in this episode. Just head over to our website, morrisinvest.com/podcast. And right there, you will have links to all of that. So Brad, you and I have become fast friends. We got coffee the other day. We were talking about real estate and we're talking about Donald Trump and the presidency and what this looks like for real estate. And of course, you have a new book out on Donald Trump's real estate empire. You've gone to every one of his properties. We'll talk about that a little bit later in the show. But man, on the commercial side of things, how did you get started with real estate? Did you first get involved with commercial real estate? Was that the first thing you did?
I've dreamed about it. I mean, as a kid, I played Monopoly, and it was always a game that I loved to play, and I loved to win. And I really learned early in life, that acquiring real estate, can be a wealth engine. And so I got through college. I took a real estate class. I went to a little small college, Presbyterian College down in South Carolina. We had one real estate class, but when I got out of school, I knew that this is what I wanted to do. My mother had been in real estate, and she still is, but she was in real estate for several decades, residential and some commercial. And also my father and my grandfather used to own motels down in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, which is a resort destination down here, down in the South. And so, it was part of the family. It was in my DNA. But I got out of school. I went right to work. I didn't go get my MBA. I wanted to just dive right into it. And I became a leasing agent for a developer. We later became business partners. So we started, I basically went from the brokerage business into the development business, which is kind of a natural evolution. And then I did that for about 20 to 25 years. And it was in the early 2000s, my partners and I started to branch out and go kind of a different direction. And then when the recession hit, Clayton, I you know, I had a wealth of information, but I, you know, lost a lot of my equity in a lot of the deals that I had done with my business partner. And of course, the economy was the big torpedo, the Great Recession. So I decided I really wanted to, you know, what I thought to myself, you know, what am I going to do? You know, I was actually sitting in the parking lot one day. I've got five kids, and I was sitting there going in to buy some diapers for my kids, and I'm just, you know, wrestled with what am I going to do? I mean, the development world is completely dead. It was the recession. The banks were out of business, so they weren't lending money. And so I had this epiphany, you know, what can I do with all of this stuff I've learned over the last, you know, 20 to 25 years? So I decided to become a writer, and I decided to pivot completely from a developer to being a writer. And specifically, I wanted to be able to use my skill set to help educate the, you know, the average investor, what I call average Joe, and help them avoid some of those pitfalls, some of those mistakes that I had encountered, which were primarily liquidity or lack of liquidity and lack of diversification and even lack of transparency in different partnerships that I was involved in. So enter the world of real estate investment trusts, and I love what I do. I found my calling in life, and you know, that's how I got there.
So when we look at the stock market, I think, you know, sometimes financial advisors don't want to hear this. You know, they make a lot of money off of your money, you know, and the stock market, as you write in the book, even in the beginning of the book, that the stock market, the S&P 500, NASDAQ, you know, they get about a 5% annual average return. That's not very good. It's okay, but it's not very mm-hmm. good. And as you point out in the book, real estate investment trusts get a much higher return. And that is really compelling for people that don't want to necessarily have to get their hands dirty by going out and fixing properties themselves and have to deal with all of that. So how are you seeing these returns, and why wouldn't everyone do this?
Well, Clayton, that's a great point. And there's certainly a trade-off when it comes to public versus private. And obviously, you know, you have immersed yourself in the private side of the real estate business, and obviously the thing is, you don't see that volatility that I see every day. You know, that's the big difference between what I do and what you do, is I have to contend with what Ben Graham would call, you know, Mr. Market.
Right.
I have to deal with the ups and downs and the mood swings. But what's interesting about the real estate investment trust, the REIT space, is that while these are publicly traded companies, the fundamentals are all driven by real estate. So, you know, an investor can own, any type of real estate imaginable. I mean, there are so many different real estate categories now that have made their way to the publicly traded sector. You know, the REIT law started in 1960 with President Eisenhower. So that's, you know, well over 50 years of history now. This is not an asset class that just was created. You know, a lot of investors like to compare REITs to MLPs, Master Limited Partnerships, or BDCs, which are fairly new products. But the REIT business has been around for a long time. And when you go back at the roots of why did REITs get started? Why did Eisenhower create the REIT law, which is actually part of the Cigar Act for some odd reason, back in 1960? And that is because, you know, this and what's interesting, I always draw this parallel, because Eisenhower at the time, he was a president who was helping the country kind of claw back from some tough times. So you might recall that he really helped the whole U.S. create this interstate system, and a lot of the interstates around the
right the US highway system sure.
highways were created as a result of Eisenhower. Well, the same way, the same concept for real estate. Eisenhower paved the way for average investors to be able to access institutionally held high quality real estate. And the difference is it only costs $1. I mean, all you can do is buy a share of stock, and you can invest in the Empire State Building, which is a REIT called Empire State Realty Trust. Or you can invest in a number of real estate products. You know, back in 1960, there were only about four different, we call food groups. You know, you had your major, you know, apartments, multifamily, you had retail, office, and just your main, you know, four or so different food groups, we call them in the real estate world. Well, now there's so many different subsectors that have grown out of this REIT world. You know, for example, I now cover a company called Core Energy, which is a REIT that invests in pipelines. And so from a legal perspective, yes, a pipeline is considered real estate. There's actually the Core Energy owns a pipeline that goes is in the Gulf, underneath the Gulf of Mexico. So I'm a shareholder in that company that invests in that asset, that particular asset class. Then you go over to maybe another asset class, another REIT called Hannon Armstrong, ticker symbol HASI, and they invest in clean energy products and solar panels and turbines and generators. All of this is considered real estate from a legal perspective. So it's given investors this broad array of opportunity to invest in just practically any type of real estate asset imaginable.
So any real estate asset imaginable. So if I have a 401k, for instance, and I'm just talking about this recently with an investor, you know, 401ks really make the employer money, right? Because they're picking a few funds that they, you know, will let you invest in. They're going to make fees on that. Everyone's going to make fees. But with, am I able to invest in REITs in my 401k, or is that something I'm not even allowed to do yet?
No, yeah, you can. And again, you know, I try to tell people, I mean, I give REIT advice. I don't give stock advice, but yeah, you can. I mean, there are so many different vehicles that you can go into, and some of those are tax advantage. Some of those are not tax advantage. But the main concept I did want to touch on, and when it comes to REITs, is that there's one law, which is really, I think, the fundamental law that that revolves around the REIT world. And that law is that to be a REIT, that the company must pay out at least 90% of taxable income in the form of dividends. So when you look at a REIT, and a lot of investors look at dividend yield, because that's especially retirees and people who are pre-retirees. So people who are either, you know, retired or soon to be retired, which really is everybody at some point. So when you look at dividend yields, is always one of the big metrics that people look at, you know, because a lot of investors like to match fund their living. And I've heard this on some of your podcasts with some of your single family product, is that, you know, people want to live off that income stream that's coming in, you know. Right. So that dividend yield is really important. So the reason that REITs pay out higher dividends than say like a Walgreens or a Starbucks or FedEx or any of these blue chip companies that you can invest in today. But that's why, because, you know, Starbucks, use them as an example. You know, you can invest in Starbucks, and I don't know what the dividend yield is today. I could guess it's probably between 1.5% and 2%. And because Starbucks doesn't have to pay out, the company does not have to pay out, you know, a dividend. But if you own a portfolio of Starbucks that are in a REIT wrapper or a REIT structure, then that income, those rent checks that are paid into this REIT, and you can say Starbucks rent that's paid into this REIT, not at least 90% of that taxable income. Most companies pay out 100% of taxable income, but most REITs. That's what. So that what I'm selling you is it. So you could buy a basket of Starbucks in a REIT wrapper that would pay out, say, a 5 or 6% dividend yield, or you could buy Starbucks that's paying a 1.5% to 2% dividend yield, and that's what makes this business model so attractive, because of these high dividend yields. And obviously, you know the power of compounding. I don't have to tell you this, but that's how you create wealth. It's the power of compounding.
So let's walk through the mechanics of a REIT. If I'm off the street, I walk up to you in 30-second elevator pitch. Tell me what a REIT is. What is a real estate investment trust? Bottom line that for us.
Sure. Well, there's really three attributes that I look for in a REIT. Number one, it's a basket of real estate that's managed in a public wrapper. But it provides three really unique qualities. First and foremost, and we've already discussed it, is liquidity. I mean, this is a liquid security. So yeah, it is real estate, but look what happened in the recession, or, you know, and just use that as an example. I mean, in 2000, nobody knew this last recession was coming, but just say that you needed to get your money out before the last recession. And say my kid needed new braces or my daughter needed tuition money. You know, I've got liquidity, you know, boom, I'm sitting at my desk. All I have to do is click a button and the money gets transferred to my account, and I can go pay for the braces or the college. So liquidity is one thing. That's most important. Number two is REITs have diversification. So, again, I used to own a lot of private real estate in my prior life, but I was not very well diversified. So, most of my assets were in South Carolina, and I had a few in Georgia and North Carolina. But let's just say the economy in South Carolina went in the tank. I don't think it will, by the way. It's pretty strong here. But let's say there's, some economic engine that failed, and all of a sudden South Carolina became a depressed market. Then, man, I'm not diversified. If I own, as I was not in the past. So REITs provide a diversified, both geographically and also from a rental base, very well diversified structures. And the final thing is, and this is probably one of the most important, is transparency. I mean, these are governed under the SEC. So, you basically have these management teams that you essentially employ as a shareholder in a company. You're really employing the management team who's working for you. So you have these professional, experienced management teams that are helping manage risk within the portfolio. So those three attributes, I think my elevator pitch, liquidity, diversification, and transparency, that's the reason you want to own real estate investment trusts.
So let's look at, as part of our diversification process here, there's a bunch of different areas that we can buy REITs in. As you mentioned, underseed real estate, basically, in all sorts of different ways. So some of the different categories, take us through some of the different areas. As I even thumb through your book here, I'm looking at, lodging and hotels. But just take us through some of the different categories to help us wrap our heads around these.
Sure. Well, I'm actually finishing up my newsletter. I have a newsletter called the Forbes Real Estate Investor. And so in that newsletter, we kind of go through a lot of the sectors. And I'll tell you, the ones I favor now the most are company or sectors like healthcare. I mean, healthcare, it didn't exist about 15 years ago in the REIT space. And it was really over the last 10 or 15 years that you saw a number of companies go public in this REIT space. So now there are around 15 or 16 companies that I cover that are healthcare related, and you have different sectors or subsectors in healthcare. For example, you can invest in just REITs that own medical office buildings, which is a very recession resistant. There's a lot of demand. Obviously, everybody has to go to the doctor, so these buildings are basically doctor buildings that are typically at or close to hospital campuses. So you have medical office buildings, you have senior living. These are companies that, huge demand, aging population, so huge demographic tailwinds behind that sector. And then you have skilled nursing, which has been under a lot more pressure of late as it relates to government pay. A lot of the skilled nursing facilities have Medicare, Medicaid customers. And so there has been some issues with that particular sector, but those issues have created opportunity. So you just got to know which are the right companies to buy, and that's what we do in our newsletter. And then we have hospital, where you have a sector where you have a several REITs who just invest in hospitals by themselves. I may have missing one other. There's actually life science, which is kind of another subsector. And then you can invest in just the diversified healthcare that they own a piece of all of those. Different categories that I mentioned, and those are the big REITs like Ventas and Welltower, the kind of the big two in HCP, and they kind of own a smorgasbord of all of those different asset classes. So I like healthcare just because of the demographics behind them. Everybody's go to the doctor, everybody gets sick, healthcare is in high demand. The other space I really like a lot is that what I call the net lease space, and this is I used the analogy earlier of Starbucks, but just say you had a freestanding Starbucks or a freestanding Walgreens or a freestanding Red Lobster. So there's a huge demand for investors who want to own these types of buildings because they have the longest term contractual leases. So, whereas in a single family residence, you have typically, I assume, some of your tenants would sign leases for, say, a year or so. Well, in this sector, the net lease sector, these companies have longer term leases in excess of 10 years. So you've got much more predictability and reliability in terms of the income stream. And there's such a demand of space, and the supply is enormous. It's trillions of dollars of supply in the market today. So and what's interesting is those companies, these triple net REITs, they have performed the best over long periods of time. When we went through the Great Recession, there were only about 12 REITs that managed to increase their dividends during the periods of 2008 to 2009, during the darkest days of the recession. And there were 12 REITs that did that. Out of those, there were three companies that managed to continue to increase their dividends. A number of these companies, by the way, were forced to cut dividends. Again, this is one of the worst, you know, economic times we've seen. Not only, you know, REITs, but banks, anybody, any company that was tied to financials got hammered in the recession. But again, the net lease REITs didn't. And that tells you that this is a very defensive asset class and has outperformed most every other asset class in the real estate space. So I like those spaces quite a bit. The shopping center space is kind of interesting. I'm writing an article about that today. I mean, you know, obviously we're in shopping season now and right. You know, so, but the big concern is what, you know, I'm going to do most of my shopping, you know, at home. You know, Amazon's, you know, my best friend. And so what's happening to the brick and mortar world? And so, but what's interesting, I think this, it's been a lot overblown. There's no question that the mall space has been under pressure. We know that JCPenney and Sears have been the, you know, the kind of the ugly ducklings in the retail world. And there are a number of malls that have those anchors in them. So those are like one in my town. We've got a JCPenney and we've got a Sears. And that's owned by a REIT called CBL. And we don't have a buy recommendation on that company for that reason, because they have a large concentration of those types of tenants. But people ignore, or the market ignores lots of times these higher quality, we call the A malls. And these are the malls that are owned by REITs like Simon Property Group, or like Taubman Centers, or like General Growth, GGP. And so, you know, they have a lot higher, success performance ratio than say some of these B malls. Mm. And again, the tenants would include companies like, you know, Saks and Neiman Marcus and so, you know, those malls are actually thriving. And the shopping center world is kind of the same concern, you know. And so I really like the grocery anchored centers and the shopping center world, where you've got a high quality grocery chain like a Kroger, or down in the Southeast Publix, or HEB down in Texas. So I think that's kind of what we look for in those sectors as well.
So if you want more information on REITs, you can check out Brad's book, The Intelligent REIT Investor. You can also check out his newsletter and subscribe to that, so you can learn the daily sort of ins and outs of where the market is headed. Before we let you go, and with a few minutes left here, I wanted to talk about your new book that just came out. And it also concerns commercial real estate, but it also concerns our most recent election, which is Donald Trump winning the election, and your new book called The Trump Factor. And you went to, I think you spent a couple of years going around to every one of Trump's, I mean, this is before he even announced that he was running for president. You did all this research and going around all of his different properties all around the world, meeting with his employees, trying to understand his real estate empire. What an undertaking, my friend.
Yeah, it was, you know, it's surreal. Just to be honest, there's only one word that can describe, you know, the book and post-election. I mean, I was there when you know, at the victory party at the Hilton in New York, and I still can't get over the fact, you know, that he won. Now, I thought he had a good chance. I said early on, even on Fox and CNN and the other networks back last year when he was campaigning, that I was, you know, a Trump supporter, but it still has not sunk in that he actually won. But yeah, I mean, I started working on this book, Clayton, about 4 years ago, and, you know, it's hard. I mean, as a journalist, I don't make a lot of money, so I, you know, would save up a few dollars, then I'd go travel down to Florida, then I'd save up some money, and I saved a lot of money and went over to Scotland and Ireland and spent a couple of weeks out there visiting his courses. And, you know, again, this was all going on 3 years ago, 4 years ago, so I, you know, had no clue that he was going to be the president of the United States. But what really prompted me to do this is I had, you know, spent a lot of time with Trump, and obviously not as much now, but just listening to the media around the world, and I felt like nobody had really addressed, you know, the real value of Donald Trump and how he created the wealth from an outsider perspective. I mean, obviously, you know, I know Donald Trump, but I wanted to be the first person to be able to, you know, articulate his you know, his financial, his businesses, his brand equity, put all that together, and what is he really worth? And obviously, he still hasn't released his tax returns. Who knows if he will? So I think my book is you know, again, it was really perfect timing. I mean, I'm obviously glad he won, and you know, I've gone into great detail to provide, you know, in-depth an in-depth analysis of his entire net worth and all of the properties and the brand, which I think is an essential part of the valuation of Donald Trump today. And it's interesting to see kind of where that's going moving forward.
Yeah, where do you see it going forward? I mean, we're obviously in, you know, 2017. There's a lot of uncertainty where we're headed. When you look at his holdings and the properties that he sold off in Atlantic City and other places, just by as using him as a bellwether, where do you see us going?
You know, we've got a lot more clarity now that he's in office, but obviously it's been all over the news. I mean, he's going to have to bifurcate, you know, his businesses from his new job. And I'm certain he's going to do that. But I think the brand of Donald Trump, and I wrote about this, the last chapter in my book was really dedicated to the brand piece. And it's a subjective conversation. We could talk about it for hours and hours. But I used an analogy in the book, really two different people that come to mind. One is, and I mentioned this, is Henry Ford and the 110-year-old, you know, brand of the Ford company, the luxury iconic Ford brand, and kind of drawing that comparison of what the Trump brand would look like, you know, 50 or 60 or 70 years from now. And another, you know, but again, there's nobody like Donald Trump. But we all know that he's created the wealth through real estate. I think that the Trump brand and real estate will always be connected. And even though Donald Trump will be disconnected from that for 8 years, I think, you know, he is the one that's where he created his wealth and his knowledge and his leadership. So, and another person I mentioned was Virgin Airlines and Richard Branson, and how he's been able to develop his Virgin brand into a globally recognized product. So, you know, Trump's there. I mean, he's got such a stage now that it's unbelievable. And I think the brand of Donald Trump is going to survive. The kids are going to be absolutely you know, essential to that. And I think I know them all, Eric, Don, and Ivanka. And I think they're certainly all qualified to continue with the next generation and the future generations of the Trump brand. And again, I think that it'll be real interesting to see how that goes forward. But there's one thing I'll tell you that, you know, the common ingredient that I've witnessed in all the properties and all the conversation, I mean, he does not cut corners at all. You know, and if you visit any of his properties, and I was the first customer at the DC Hotel, which just opened a few weeks ago, stayed in this room. And I mean, it's just unbelievable. The guy he does not cut corners, and, you know, it's luxury at all costs. And, yeah. You know, it's amazing to see. And the last thing I'll tell you, you cannot outwork Donald Trump. You know, I've been to rallies with him stacked up back to back to back. And you know, he's 20 years older than I am. And, you know, you just cannot outwork. Nobody can outwork Donald Trump. This guy is a workaholic. And I'm really anxious to see how he performs in the White House. I really think he's going to do well. And so far, the indicators and the market are really positive.
Yeah, we've certainly seen a rally. So it's interesting to watch that. And the book is called The Trump Factor, Unlocking the Secrets Behind the Trump Empire. And again, written before he even started running for president. So pretty amazing. Well, Brad, it's been wonderful having you here on the show and really enlightening us about real estate investment trusts, also known as REITs. Where can people learn more about REITs if they want to take the plunge?
Sure. My website is www.ireitinvestor.com, or you can certainly follow me on Twitter. I'm at rbradthomas.
Perfect. Well, Brad, it's been a real treat having you here on the show. I want to thank you again for really educating us on this, because I had to admit, I did not know a stinking thing about him. So thanks so much for joining us.
You bet. No, I look forward to seeing you again next time. Thanks so much.
All right. Thanks, Brad. And thanks to all of you for downloading and subscribing and pushing us up as one of the top real estate investing podcasts on iTunes. Thank you kindly for all of your 5-star reviews that you've been leaving. I really, really appreciate that. We work hard here to bring a ton of value to you each and every week with 3 episodes. We publish Monday, Wednesday, and Thursday. I'd love for all of you to go out there, whatever it is, whether it's REITs or you know, single family homes or mobile home investing, whatever it is that you do, I don't care. Go out there, take action, and become a real estate investor. Much love to you all. We'll see you next time, everyone.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at lower.com field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at columbuscrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
When we started writing our thoughts down on paper, it opened up endless possibilities. Ideas could grow beyond the borders of the mind, and it changed the world. Somewhere along the way, we lost touch with paper, distracted by devices made for every purpose except for thinking and focus. On edge, waiting for the next notification. But what if new technology didn't pull us away from paper, but brought us closer to it? Listen. That's not paper. It's the sound of the new Remarkable Paper Pro, rewriting the future. A paper tablet with a true color ink display, gentle reading light, and unheard of tactility. With digital features for taking notes, thinking, and organizing, without any distractions. Paper is about to change the world again. Get your paper tablet at remarkable.com today.